It's Angeline.
And Andrew.
And
Austin. Hi.
Hey! Oh, you know what? That's cute. I like that we're all A's. You know.
Oh my gosh, we're triple A.
Triple A.
Oh my gosh.
We're sort of full band. I'm just saying.
I hope you know that Angeline and I made the same face. It was actually kind of great. We were like, oh, folk. Like, it was like the greatest thing. We were like,
perfect.
Yes.
We're already gelling and ready to go.
So the name of our folk band will be Aces, because this week we are talking about asexuality.
Oh, yay!
So Austin, do you want to introduce yourself real fast? Tell everyone a little about you.
Yeah. Hi. My name is Austin Kendrick. I am 22 years old. I study film production at Chapman University. I'm looking to be a sound designer, and I am what the kids like to call asexual.
I don't know if you remember this. I think we met on a chorus line.
That we did, like two.
We did. Okay,
and a half years
I thought
ago?
That was it.
Yeah.
About
Oh my gosh, was that 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, don't talk about it.
I was like an infant. It was like my first professional show I ever did.
You were wonderful.
Thank you. So were you.
So, jumping into asexuality,
mm-hmm.
We're going to let Austin do a lot of the talking because obviously neither Andrew or I are experts in this field. So we're just kind of going to guide the conversation more. To begin with, let's talk about what sexuality is and is not for our listeners.
Yes.
Austin, how would you
define it? Well, I just want to preface this by saying, like, I can only speak from my own experiences. I am not speaking for every person who is asexual, who has experienced it, because, you know, every person is different. But from my experience, basically asexuality means that you do not experience sexual attraction. There is a big difference between sexual attraction and romantic attraction. So think of romantic attraction as like seeing someone and you would like to go on dates and spend time with them, maybe hold their hands, maybe kiss. And then sexual attraction is everything kind of past that, you know, touching, intercourse, oral sex, you know, everything that goes past just dating. So I don't experience sexual attraction. I do experience romantic attraction. If you do not experience romantic attraction, that's called being aromantic. But I do experience romantic attraction, but when it comes to sexual stuff, there's nothing there. I had a friend describe it once as, I would like to hold hands, but not hold anything else. yeah.
And from my understanding, this can apply to any kind of, I know we call them sexual orientations, but them romantic orientations for this. So you can be asexual and heteroromantic, or mm-hmm. homoromantic, or asexual and aromantic. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can be asexual, panromantic, biromantic. It doesn't really matter what gender of person you're attracted to. It just matters what type of attraction you feel towards them, you know?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is different than celibacy, which is something that is, you know, kind of a volunteer thing. When you're celibate, that's within your control.
Yes, that's an active choice that you make. You're experiencing the feelings, but choosing not to act on them. Whereas when it comes to asexuality, that's not really a choice. You know, it's, you don't, there's nothing there. There's no choice to be made.
When we're talking about asexuality, the common misconception that if you are asexual, this means you don't have a libido. And from everything that we are reading on this, those are different things. So you can have low sex drive and still be heterosexual, mm-hmm. and it does not make you asexual. It just means that hormonally, medically, maybe in terms of emotionally in your relationship, something is sexually compatible there. Mm-hmm. But you can be asexual, still have sexual drive. You can, you know, wake up with morning, you can feel arousal. It sounds like some asexuals even masturbate.
Oh, yeah.
It's just more about you feel the drive to have sex with a partner. True.
Pretty much. Yeah, but the parts down there all still work. I mean, it still feels good. And you know, plenty of people who do identify as asexual still do have sex. And I know those ideas sound unbelievably incompatible. But coming from someone who it does identify as asexual and also has sex, I can tell you that it does happen. Not for everyone. Again, different people, different experiences. Some people are sex repulsed to where they can't even approach the concept of having sex or sexual relations with a partner. Some people you know, have sex to connect with a partner, or they have a partner who is fully sexual, so it's kind of a concession, not a concession, but a facet of the relationship, a means of connection. And then there are asexual people who are just like masturbate because it feels good, you know. It's a complex relationship between, when you're asexual, you really have to kind of look at sex differently, and some, it's just different for everyone. But sex still goes along with asexuality.
Gotcha.
Inherently.
So when did you, have you always identified as asexual as something that is more of a recent revelation for you? Like, do you talk about maybe your journey towards this?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, I didn't come across the term asexual until I was about 18 years old. But it was one of those things that once I heard that word, a lot of things just clicked into place. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, you know, kind of looking back at my life. So I can say that for my entire life, I've been asexual, but I didn't have a word for it until I was, you know, in my late teens.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that that's something that, oddly enough, as much as we were saying, we don't, the lack of experience in with the experience itself, I think most people would agree that children are pretty much are asexual. There's not that desire for, like, the idea that if it's something that you're identified as your whole life, like, that actually makes more sense to me than somebody who's like the very idea that we go from, like, asexual children to being such sexual beings. You know what I mean? I think that's more of a drastic change, despite the fact that that's the one that's more quote unquote like normalized by society because of like what we see. But like, it's interesting that like that the concept seems so like outside of like the realm of possibility to some people. But I'm like, no, but it's where we all begin.
Exactly.
At the same time, it's like, yeah, that's it's not outside of our like mindset or facility at all.
Exactly. Like, I remember being younger, and obviously, like, as a child, I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a sex drive, but
that's what I mean. Yeah.
But I remember being younger, and I never developed crushes easily on people. My sisters actually assumed that I was developing crushes on girls because I never told them about crushes I was developing on guys. But I just wasn't developing crushes, period. And I remember as you kind of move up into like middle school, you know, early high school. And I distinctly remember getting to the age where, you know, friends would start being like, oh my gosh, this celebrity is so hot. And I just had question marks above my head. I was like, yeah, yeah, I get it. Yeah. So I just like pick a male celebrity at random and be like, yeah, that's my celebrity crush. I'd totally bang that guy, you know, just cause, you know, that's what my friends were doing. And I just figured, I bet they feel the same, you know. I guess I think this is just a thing we're kind of all putting on to act like we're growing up. And it wasn't until I was older and, you know, hindsight's 20/20 that I was like, oh no, that was you, you know. that was your asexuality trying to push through. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was interesting facet as we were reading up on this, that one of kind of like a way that people help delineate is low sex drive causes people who are sexual beings distress. You know, they are upset that their drive is not higher, that their libido is higher. Whereas with asexuality, the fact that they don't desire sex is not in and of it's stressful or worrisome to them. Maybe it's worrisome because of like the pressure that we put on it societally, but it feels like a very normal component of growing up and being this. Is that, would you say that was true for you?
I would definitely say so. I think the most distressing part for me, kind of coming to terms with it and realizing kind of that it was a part of me, was for the longest time I didn't have a word for it. I felt, like you said, I think the biggest issue was pressure, and I felt very broken. I remember I dated a boy in high school for about 8 months. And you know, when you're 16 and you've been dating someone for 8 months, you know what's kind of expected to be happening. And yeah. At that time, I had no concept of what was going on with my sexuality. And it would get to the point where you know, my boyfriend at the time would, you know, start trying to touch me and everything, and my whole body would lock up. my whole body would, my spine would lock up and I would shut down. And he was incredibly respectful, incredibly, you know, kind, never pressured me. But I like hated myself. I was like, why can't I do this? Like everyone else is doing it. Why is it not working with me? And so coming to the word asexual and kind of realizing that it is a part of me that's okay and that it doesn't mean I'm broken was incredibly healing for me. And kind of accepting that, no, it's okay to be this way and you're not lesser. And, you know, this is just the way you are. It's just like your hair is curly, your eyes are blue. You know, it just is.
That really wonderful thing about, so the resource that she hooked us up with, in case anyone is interested in looking at it, we'll link it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. It's called, so the acronym is AVEN, AVEN, which stands for Asexual Visibility and Education Network. Mm-hmm. And the whole, it's a website, asexuality.org, and the whole feel of the website is very, like, no pressure. It's very welcoming. It's a lot of like, if you identify this way, then we respect that. It's your identification. So I think there's a nice sense of community that's with that. Did you feel, did you have friends that identified as asexual and did that help, or did you just seek out that community?
I kind of had to, I did have to seek it out at first because I didn't really tell anyone when it first happened because I felt like I needed the time to process it on my own. So I spent many a fair hour on that website, on asexuality.org. And like you said, incredibly welcoming, incredibly, you know, it was very, very much a community, very much just like, hey, your experience is your experience and we're just here to help guide you through it. And that really kind of gave me some solid footing in understanding what it was, this part of me. And so after that, first person I told was my boyfriend. We've been together for about 5.5 years. So we had been dating for about a year when I kind of came to him and I was like, I think I might be asexual. And he, throughout our entire relationship, ever since that moment, has been nothing but understanding and kind and respectful about all of it. I mean, I think sometimes he even, you know, feels more comfortable with it than I am sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because I tend to put pressure on myself sometimes about those residual feelings of feeling broken. I told my boyfriend and then I told my mom and my mom just literally paused and went, oh, that makes sense. That was her only response. And then after that, I told my very close group of friends, and they were nothing but, you know, supportive and understanding. I mean, some people had a few questions, which I kind of like stumbled my way through answering, like I'm doing now.
And, no, you're doing great.
Yeah, you don't sound like you're stumbling.
Okay, thank God. I've had a few friends that I've made throughout the years who have identified on the asexuality spectrum, whether they be fully asexual or somewhere in the middle. Because just like any form of, you know, anything, there's no real black and white. It's not really a binary. There's a spectrum on one end. It's sexual, so you experience sexual attraction, no problem. And then on the other end is asexuality, which is you don't experience that at all. And you can exist anywhere. You can exist either, you know, on asexual or on sexual or anywhere in between. There's people who identify as gray sexual, which is you tend more towards asexuality, but you do experience sexual attraction every once in a blue moon. There's some people who identify as demisexual, which is you don't experience sexual attraction until you've formed a very deep emotional bond with someone. I initially identified as demisexual, but then I kind of realized I tended more towards full asexuality. And so as I kind of went through my first years of college and I moved away from my first few years of college and met a bunch of new people, I did come across more people who identified on the asexuality spectrum. And that was everything. That was everything because it felt like being validated to a certain degree. Cause I was like, oh my God, I'm not the only one who experiences this. I'm actually legitimately not alone. Like it's one thing to be online and to, you know, to hear of other people's experiences there. I mean, I cannot express how valuable that was to me as a teenager coming to terms with this. But it's different when there's like a person in front of you saying the words, I'm also asexual. It was so comforting. And it just meant, it always means a lot to me.
So you've mentioned that you have a boyfriend.
Yes.
And I thought that maybe it's a good, for us to take the opportunity to talk about attraction versus arousal, and then the role that those play in relationships and romance. Mm-hmm. So attraction is, I'm reading a site, defined as, many asexual people may experience forms of attraction that can be romantic, aesthetic, or sensual in nature, do not lead to a need to act out on the attraction sexually. Mm-hmm. So this is where we kind of get into heteroromantic and asexual versus homoromantic and asexual or biromantic or any of those things. Mm-hmm. So somebody who experiences attraction would identify as romantic but asexual, mm-hmm. rather than aromantic, correct?
Yes.
And then arousal. So this is a different action. Arousal, asexual people, arousal sometimes interchanged with libido in asexual dialogue is a fairly regular occurrence, though it is not associated with the desire to find a sexual partner or partners. Mm-hmm. This could include, but is not limited to, arousal hormone variation in a person's menstrual cycle or erections certain times of the day. And then those who enjoy masturbation, fantasies, libido, etc., but have no desire to seek a partner, identify sometimes as autocrissexual. I hope mm-hmm. I said that
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then finally, relationships and romance. So you've talked a little bit about this, being somebody who is asexual in a relationship with a partner who identifies as a sexual human mm-hmm. being, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
So do you find that there helps the most with you guys? Was it a communication? Like, some asexual people are willing to engage sexually with their partners, whereas others would prefer not to. So I assume that maybe in those instances are outside arrangements and things like that happens. Do you and your friends, is this like a topic that comes up for you guys frequently? How would you maybe suggest somebody who feels that they're asexual and is in a relationship with a sexual partner, what you think is key in approaching that?
I think definitely the foundation of, you know, any facet to a relationship, but especially a sexual relationship, is communication. You need to be very honest, both with yourself and with your partner, about how you feel, both in, you know, a long-term thing, you know, discussing, you know, asexuality or full sexuality, and also just in the moment, what are you feeling right then and there? Because it doesn't matter how long you and your partner are together for, doesn't matter how much you love them, you can't read each other's minds. So first things first, just communicate. Communicate, and then also, you know, just this kind of goes in tandem with communication, but just respect. Respecting each other's feelings, each other's wishes, you know, I'm trying to find words.
That's okay.
You're finding great ones so far.
Yeah, that's good. We're on the right track. Well, I think just respect and understanding, because even if your partner doesn't come from the same place as you, you know, try to see it from their perspective, you know, and respect where they're coming from. But don't compromise yourself, you know. It's very much, it has to be a collaborative effort. It's you two as a team. It's never you against your partner. It's you two working as a team versus an obstacle that you have to overcome together, and you can only yes. overcome together. And so,
I love that.
And so I would say that at the base of everything, especially when it comes to sexual relationships, especially when it comes to approaching a sexual relationship, between someone who is asexual and someone who is fully sexual.
So I just want to say, for anyone who follows us on social media might have seen that I wanted to start a new drinking game recently, where you have to drink every time I'm like, yes! Yeah! I was being, speaking of respect, I was being real respectful the whole thing. But Angeline, he's adjusting my seat throughout that, all of that. All I second every feeling, every thought. Okay, that is God all. Angeline has more that actually helped. Not just what I'm saying.
Oh, well, so I was going to ask, I think we talk this a little bit on the pod a lot in real life, about how we model a lot of our ideas about romantic relationships based on what we see around us, because it's familiar and it's comfortable. So this applies to, you know, the relationship of your family, or your siblings, your friends, a lot of what we see in media, rom-coms. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like... It seems to me that there is a lack of representation of in media. Are there certain asexual characters or mediums that you like have been particularly helpful to you in kind of like, you know, having someone to relate to maybe before you were ready to really talk about it with those in your immediate circle?
I can't say there was one. There have been very few characters in media, in TV shows, in movies, that are explicitly asexual. Of course, there are people who, you know, you can speculate about characters, but it's not written into the explicit text.
Okay.
So I can't say that there was one that I directly kind of identified with or anything like that. I definitely think we need less subtext and more overt text when it comes to asexual representation. Because I think that could, you know, normalize it. Asexuality is a very weird concept in our society and how our society is set up and how our society views sex. It's such a concept that goes against everything we've been conditioned to believe and everything we've kind of consumed. That I understand why it would be kind of a difficult thing to implement, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You know?
Agreed. Oh, you're all for representation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So speaking of, since there's not a lot of models for us available in pop culture, there are other facets that maybe our listeners are not super familiar with when it comes to asexuality. So specifically, I'm talking about being sex repulsed versus sex indifferent versus sex favorable. Do you want to talk those a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Like I mentioned before, you know, every person who identifies as asexual has, you know, a different relationship with sex. Just like, you know, everybody has a different relationship with sex and sexual attraction in their own bodies. So like I said before, how asexuality itself is a spectrum, there's also, you know, kind of a spectrum when it comes to how asexual people relate to sex. There's people who are sex repulsed, who sex is not on the table for them. It is not something that they want to experience. It's not something that they like. The thought of having sex, just mortifying, terrifying. And so they avoid it. There's people who are on the other end, on the opposite spectrum, who are sex favorable, who, you know, sex feels good. Doesn't matter if you're asexual or not, the parts down there still work and sex still, you know, an orgasm feels nice. You know, so,
I love that you keep saying the still work. That's my favorite, yeah, well, favorite little phrase.
it's true, because people assume when you say you're asexual, it means that, like, you just got nothing down there, you know,
like a Barbie doll.
Yeah, like it's just completely smooth, but it's very far from the truth. But when it comes to, you know, being sex favorable, they can have sex and they, you know, they'll have sex. It feels nice. And, but they still don't experience sexual attraction. You know, you can have sex without sexual attraction. That's another concept that like kind of is hard to reconcile, for most people, but, and then some,
which is crazy because I identify as heterosexual and I have had sex with people that like,
exactly.
In retrospect, I wasn't that attracted to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that they weren't attractive people, just like there wasn't much of an emotional connection going on. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, we're here. And like you said, the parts work. It feels
exactly. So exact same principle applying to sex favorable people. And then there's somewhere in the middle, there's sex indifferent people who, you know, could go without sex. The thought doesn't entirely repulse them, but they aren't, like, actively seeking it out, you know. There's sometimes where they can have sex, sometimes where they can't, you know. that the situation that I talked about before, where it's like, you know, if you're asexual and you have a partner who's fully sexual, sometimes it'll be a thing where it's like, yeah, I'll have sex every once in a while for my partner, you know, and that's that, you know. So yeah, and words.
Go ahead.
I kind of identify somewhere as in like sex indifferent, probably leaning a little bit more towards like sex positive. Anyways, I'm somewhere in that middle ground where there are times where it's like, cool, yeah, I'm down for it. And there's other times where I'm like, my body can't do that right now. So.
Sure. Yeah. So I was going to ask, related to that subject, you don't have to name names or anything if you're not comfortable, but it seems to me that if you had two their sex or their sexuality was not compatible, but they wanted to stay together, that maybe in some of those instances they would be bringing in like a third party, or there would be an arrangement with like a professional sex thing like that. Is that something that you feel, have you heard about within the community? Do people talk about that openly? Like, is this something that is taboo? Is it not a thing at all? Obviously speak for everyone, but from your experience, is that something that comes up ever?
I think it kind of just depends person to person. Depends on what everyone in the situation is comfortable with. I can't say I've met anyone in person who has had an arrangement like that. That doesn't mean arrangements like that don't exist. As long as everyone in the situation is comfortable and being respected, then by all means, you know, whatever works best for you, you don't have to ascribe to what anyone else is doing. Whatever works best for you in your relationship, you do you.
You do you.
You talked a little bit earlier about demisexuality. Mm-hmm. So kind of related to that, but not quite the same. I was reading about monogamy, which is, I think that the defining with that is, if your partner never wanted to have sex again, would you be cool with that?
Yeah.
Is there, I assume that kind of falls under the asexuality umbrella.
Yes, it does, because that kind of is a fundamental question of where your sex drive is and where your sexual attraction lies. You know, like if you identify as someone who's asexual and your partner came up to you and said, yeah, I never want to have sex again, you'd be like, cool, sounds good. You know, I have no problem with that. But it might be a little different if, you know, if your partner came up to you and said the same thing, you know, I never want to have sex again. And you felt like, oh, I don't know if I could do that. You know, that's kind of more what what was the term you used?
Monogamous sexuality.
Yes.
It sounds like kind of like a branch of demisexuality in which specifically you've only ever wanted to have sex with the partner that you are with now, but if they wanted to stop, it would not, like, nothing in the relationship would use anything, in your opinion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because of that.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that has to do specifically because demisexuality, that form of asexuality and, you know, sexual relation is so dependent on emotion and connection. I mean, the whole of your ability to experience sexual attraction hinges on your connection with the other person. So yeah, when it comes to monogamous sexuality, I think that definitely is deeply entwined with demisexuality and sexuality, experiencing sexual attraction being so deeply entrenched in connecting with a specific person on an emotional level.
Emotionally, yeah. With them.
Exactly.
So statistically, according to Avon, it says that roughly 1% of our population is asexual. Mm-hmm. I asterisked that because I'm curious if we think that statistic is accurately reflective, given that asexuality is something that's new on the scene and that doesn't get talked about a lot, and there's not a lot of representation mm-hmm. out there for it, so it's hard to see that and be like, oh yeah, that's me. I feel that too.
Oh, yeah.
And it also requires people to be willing to admit that to themselves, as well as whoever is, you know, pulling and collecting this data and analysis.
Exactly. I think asexuality is a tricky thing to kind of get numbers on, because it is kind of a thing that people don't really talk about. You know, people assume inherently that you just experience sexual attraction because that's how it works, right? And so it's not really a thing that gets asked. And so many people can go their pretty much their whole lives without realizing that if they never come across the word, if they never come across the concept of it, you know, they could go their whole lives without really knowing. And it's also a thing where it's just like some people don't want to talk about their a place where people might view them as lacking. You know, I talked about earlier how I felt very broken as a teenager because I didn't have words for why I couldn't do this thing. And so, you know, unfortunately, there can be an amount of shame that comes with that. I'm not saying it's intrinsic, but, you know, societal pressures can really kind of bear down on you when it comes to that. And so you're less likely to talk about it, to think about it, to broach the subject with others. So I definitely think it's something that's kind of hard to pin down because it is so, you know, taboo, oddly enough, you know?
Do you think, so I think it's in me to look at culturally how much like our status is kind of tied intrinsically to our sexual value, and how that can be very alienating for people who don't put that much emphasis on sex and don't particularly enjoy it. Because like a lot of, when we think about like rich athletes or celebrities, the assumption is that, oh, they have a lot of money, so they must also have a lot of sex. It seems like that's always, even without it being spoken, that's always like invisibly tied to it.
Oh, 100%.
And that seems like maybe not the best message for us to be. Maybe there are more important aspects to somebody's character, personality that we should be hiding.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's the phrase, you know, sex sells. You know, everyone, you know, the concept of having, like, a celebrity or someone being very successful, you know, be sex... Oh God, where do I even start, man? I don't even know.
Well, do you feel like are you hyper aware of it, given that you were kind of on the outside of the demographic that they are aiming for?
Oh yes. Especially as a teenager, when like, I don't know, a lot of things, as you start growing up, you start realizing, you know, everything from movies to advertisements to, you know, magazines, there is some emphasis on sex. You know, you can't even go into like an English literature class without there being phallic symbols everywhere. Jesus Christ. You know? So it's really strange being on the outside of that. Cause one, it kind of makes you look at yourself and be like, okay, everyone else seems to get this. Why am I not? You know? And also it makes you kind of look at, because you're really detached from the method that they're trying to use, you kind of can see it for what it is. It's very disingenuous. So yeah, it's strange. But you kind of do have to recognize that that sex sells is exactly what it says it is. It's selling you something, and you know, it's selling you something with this image, with this concept, and you can't let that, the fact that it's kind of all around you, it can make it very hard because you feel like everyone else is getting this. Everyone else is like this. I'm not, and it's weird, and I feel not right. I feel broken. And you really got to kind of do your best to kind of step back and be like, whew, not broken. I'm okay. I'm a complete and whole person. And there, this is just kind of the way society does things. You know,
it's a marketing technique.
Exactly. This is something that it can be played on and that that works well, you know, but that doesn't mean that you are any lesser because you can't relate to it directly or you don't quite get it, you know.
So think about why sex is as much a selling point as it is. Like, obviously, I think I feel like some of that is because it is a taboo subject that we don't address in a healthy manner in society, but also that main component of like we look at it as tied to us because of evolution mm-hmm. and because of procreation. So within the asexuality community, is there a lot of talk about like children? And is that, would you guys prefer to, would you personally and people to adopt versus are you open to conceiving sexually? Or where do you kind of sit on that subject? Is that something you've thought about or spoken about much?
And I think that kind of relates back to the whole, you know, where are you in terms of, are you sex repulsed, sex indifferent, you know, sex active, you know, that really kind of depends on your relationship to sex. Like I said, some people who are sex indifferent, one of the things that kind of motivates them, not motivates them, one of the reasons that they will have intercourse is to do just that, to conceive kids. Some people, that's not on the table, they'll adopt if should they want children. Me personally, I would like to have my own children. So when the time, not anytime soon, because I am still a I'm still a 22 year old. It feels like she's like 12. But you know, down the line when I'm ready for it, you know, I definitely do want to have kids of my own and conceive naturally. So that that will be in store for me. Again, not anytime soon. But yeah, it kind of just, again, depends person to person and whether people even want to have kids in the first place. And then once you figure that out, you kind of just go down the line of like, okay, how do I want to go about this? How can I go mm-hmm. about this?
And I mean, interestingly, I think there are many sexual, I don't know if I want to have kids yet, but also I don't know if I want to carry my own kids yet.
That's
like,
totally fair.
I don't know that that's, yeah, I think that there are many components going on.
Oh yeah, I think it's definitely a broader conversation about, you know, what are you comfortable with? Are you firmly attached to the idea of having kids of your own, or are you open to adopting? Do you want kids of your own? Do you want to do surrogacy? It kind of is a bigger conversation. I definitely think it's one that plays into uniquely an asexual situation, but I definitely think it's a bigger, broader conversation.
Are there, do you feel like you come up against stereotypes a lot if you identify publicly about it, or if you hear them talking about asexuality? Are there misconceptions that you would like to debunk?
I definitely think there's a lot of preconceptions when people hear the word asexuality. oh God. The thing that I get most is, oh, you're just a late bloomer. And I'm like, I'm like, it's been 22, I'm 22 now, still waiting for that bloom to come. It's not coming. I also think, you know, just what we've been talking about, you know, for the past, 45 minutes, where it's just like, just because you are asexual does not mean that, you know, you cannot have sex, or that, you know, sex doesn't feel good, or that, you know, sex is entirely wiped from your life. Asexuality does not mean that sex is entirely gone from your existence. It just means your relationship with it is a little more complicated than most people. And none of us are late bloomers, you know? We can still have fully functioning, healthy, loving relationships. We can still experience sexual connections with our partners. We can still experience connections outside of sex with our partners, you know? It doesn't make you any less. And no, the thing that I get a lot is, well, doesn't asexuality go against biology because we're all supposed to procreate? And I swear to God, it makes me want to tear my hair out. It makes me want to tear my hair out. And the answer is, plain and simply, no, no, that is not valid. No. Cause I mean, if you ask that question of asexuality, you'd have to ask it of every kind of sexuality out there.
And that wasn't strictly for procreation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's
also like, we're overpopulated.
Because the return to that is, if you have sex with a condom, your argument is invalid. Like literally, if you use birth any control. form of contraception, your argument is invalid immediately.
Bingo. I have
one question. That I have, who also identifies as asexual and also identifies as a woman. And one of the things that she up to me that I found really interesting, and I also understand the irony of me, of the three of us being the bring this up. But the way that it affects women differently, because of like what we were talking about, the way we view sex and how it relates to status, but also the way that our society, one, sexualizes and objectifies men and places their value on their sexuality. So like, for women to identify as asexual, like there's this, I don't know, she's kind of mentioned this sense from men that are, one, that get seem to be very like thrown off by it because it makes them quote unquote like inaccessible, which is like something that I think is also very interesting, because they all, because men also do the same to women who identify strictly as homosexual, because they're like, oh well, you just haven't tried,
yeah,
you know what I mean,
late
like
bloomer.
It's this like, yeah, that the late bloomer thing. Well, like this concept of like where it's also tied to like their masculinity and this machismo,
yeah,
attitude. Find interesting.
They're magic dicks.
Yeah, yeah, they're, yeah, magic dicks. Essentially, magic, they're like, you just, yeah, let me just show you how good this is. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's such a, that's a fascinating. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Oh yeah, I mean, especially because I'm still in college, and it's really fascinating watching kind of the dynamics of sex play out in college, because people have a lot of it in college.
Oh, we remember college.
You know, it very much, you know, I'm in a long-term relationship that I have no intention of leaving. So, you know, that was never on the, that's not on the table for me, kind of going out and having sex kind of be, sex with other people being on the table. Being in college, it's really strange kind of watching all that play out, because I haven't experienced anything directly. Because I've been in a long-term relationship since I was in high school, so I've never been, you know, propositioned for sex. I've never really had to be in a situation where I've had to explain to someone that I'm asexual and that's not on the table. But I have, you know, kind of imagined what that would be like. And the thought is just terrifying, because like you said, a lot of women's value gets placed in their, you know, sexual being. And what you said was right, where a lot of guys view any sort of deviation from heterosexuality as a threat to their masculinity and their validity. Mm-hmm. And the thought of having to go up to someone and try to explain that honestly is terrifying to me, because I feel like, because I sex is not on the table for me. I feel like a lot of people kind of try to connect in college in order to fuck, for lack of a better word. Yeah.
It's a great word for
yep.
it.
You know, I feel like that is pretty prevalent in college culture. So I kind of feel oddly on the outside of that, where are people going to want to connect with me earnestly if they know that I'm not available to them sexually? Are they going to view that as a threat? Are they going to view me as a valid person? You know, it's something that I toss around in my mind a lot. Again, thankfully, I haven't had to experience a situation like that directly, because, you know, I say boyfriend of 5.5 years and people tend to back off. Yeah, it's right. Being in college as someone who's asexual is extremely weird place to be, especially when people talk about, you know, just hooking up with people so casually. Not there's I want to say there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you are being safe and respectful and everyone's having a good time and no one's being put in danger, do whatever you want, you know? I did decide to do it. It's college, you know? I have no issue with that, you know? It's a strange culture to be in as such an outsider, especially, like you said, as a woman whose value is very much placed in their ability to fuck.
Fornicate.
Yeah, of course.
One time a guy yelled at me out of it whether I wanted to fornicate.
Oh, that's a lot.
I was like, cool, so you're not just a douchebag, you're a douchebag who's in English class.
Oh, no. And he's most likely a drunk douchebag who definitely Googled that word. Because he was trying to look for a better word. That he was like, how do I ask her if she wants to fuck, but not like an asshole?
Elegantly.
Like, elegantly.
How can I get across that I'm an educated douchebag?
Ivy League douchebag.
Oh. He didn't even yell it from a car, he yelled it from his ivory tower.
I think jumping off of the last couple of things that you were talking about, to clarify, there seems to also sometimes be this misconception that asexual means antisexual, and those are not the things. As Austin has very clearly demonstrated for us, it's totally possible to be somebody who identifies as asexual and still think that it is a fun activity for people to participate in.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I was, you know, allergic to bacon or whatever, and I couldn't have it, but you're enjoying it just fine, yeah, sure, why not? You do you. I don't, you know, for me, I very much kind of live on the motto, the principle of, you know, just as long as you're not putting anyone else or yourself in danger, you do you. You know, I'll do me and you do you. I'll respect you if you respect me back. And that same thing applies here, just like anywhere else in my life, you know, just because it doesn't quite click for me doesn't mean you should abstain from it just because it doesn't really click for me. If it clicks for you, you can do it, you know?
Yeah. So as we're starting to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to cover, would like to say?
I would just like to say thank you for letting me talk about this.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
I apologize for kind of stumbling all over the place. Again,
no.
I had 8:30 a.m. History of film class this morning, so that was kind of a rough way to start the day. I would just like to say that I can only speak from my experiences. I can't speak for every person in the asexual community just because I'm not every single one of those people. You know, everything that I said that applies to me won't apply to everyone else, and that's perfectly fine. If you have questions about, you know, asexuality or other people's experiences, if they're comfortable talking about it, just, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. If someone's not comfortable talking about it openly, don't push them because that's their choice. But, you know, people are different. People experience things differently, and that's all okay. And,
I will say, while we have the time, I think it's really interesting that the late bloomer conversation as a whole, most has, like, talking about it, the time that that most people are, like, the most sexually active is, like, in college, right? Is, and most people, and then as you grow older, it becomes less important as you start to place more and more importance on, like, other elements of relationships, mm-hmm. because you're capable of them as you mature and are not blinded by sexual, exactly. like, attraction. And so I find it really interesting that people choose the term late bloomer, because in fact it's more like you're just ahead of everyone else.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that's a particularly interesting choice of, like, quote-unquote critique for people to place on you, because the entire time that you've been talking this, I'm like, this sounds like a very mature, like, adult of relationships, it just sounds to me like you got there earlier than everyone else.
Yeah,
like,
well, the thing is, you know, again, my boyfriend and I started dating when I was 17, he was 16, and, you know, just because of intrinsically who I was, in order for us to function, we had to kind of just go to a more mature place. Honestly, the thought of not being in a relationship and having to seek one out with my age group right now, terrifying, because I know for a fact that there would be plenty of men out there that the second I said, I'm asexual and sex is kind of a hard thing for me to do, so I, you know, that's going to be a thing that is not always possible. I would get dropped like a hot rock, you know? That's that's just kind of the way things are. Like you said, at this age group, that is, sex is of great importance in relationships.
And that's kind of, again, that's the cool thing, is that, like, because you used to have a relationship that does rely on that is more significant than something as fleeting as sexual.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that, you know, flings in college aren't fun, you know, we've all had plenty, but, like, at the same time, there is something to be said about, like, at the end of it, there is a sense of, like,
have a bond with somebody.
Yeah, no, I am so lucky to have the most mature and understanding and wonderful partner, because I love him more than anything. I could go on forever, but I won't. But he is an incredibly mature and wonderful man, and I could not be more thankful, because we didn't get here 5.5 years later with someone who is sexual and asexual solely off of my work. You know, it was very much a team effort. It was very much a lot of work on his part. And, you know, I'm very lucky to have someone who is truly through and through a partner with me, and who loves me for me and, you know, nothing else. So, yeah. He's cool or something. I don't know.
We're, like, over here, like, oh, it's okay. We're not crying.
I put some eye drops in earlier. My eyes was getting watery.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
We're going to cut episode. I like that.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
Perfect.
Okay, so for this week's picks, to go first.
Austin, you want to go?
Okay, I'll go first. My pick is the song I Want to Hold Your Hand, originally by the Beatles, but specifically the cover from the Across the Universe soundtrack.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. I love that song, and I love that it's kind of like the intimacy of just getting to hold somebody's hand is so monumental and so special. I don't know. It's just a sweet song. I love it.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, it was my pick too, actually.
I was gonna say the same thing.
No, that's fine. No, I like that song.
I feel like I've got
song.
A pick that you might.
Oh really?
Let me hear it.
I feel like you would pick that.
Oh yes, my Beyonce for sure.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's my pick for this week. I think that yes, my Beyonce is my pick for this week for sure.
That was my backup one, because the song is she's like he wants to have sex with her, and then she's like, I said no.
Yeah.
And then she's like mad that you heard about it.
That's your problem.
Mine is Play My Darling Play by Katsunyama. Also pronounced, if you're butchering it, Katsunjammer. It's this like really cute song about like the chorus is like, play my darling play, don't yourself on the floor no more, play my darling play, there's a world outside her. And it's just kind of like the male in it is giving her the freedom to kind of like explore who she is and like what she wants. And I think that when you talk about your boyfriend being so understanding and willing to like talk to you about this and work as a team, it makes me think of that song.
I love that.
And Lee's pick is of course a song.
Oh, geez.
It's Soon from A Little Night Music, in which she is explaining why she will not with him at the moment.
Good. God bless.
And he is currently trapped on my wife's body. But he's, like, basically on my entire torso.
He just climbed up. Charlie is huge, for those listeners who don't know him. He's a big cat, so he, like, takes up all of Andrew's torso.
Yeah, he really does. Wow, I forget how big he is.
Okay, so, Austin, do you want to... If you want to, you're welcome to drop social media handles. If you don't want to, that's fine, too.
You can find me both at Twitter and on Instagram at @Aussie_Olivia. So that's AUSSIE_OLIVIA. Pretty much all you'll find on there is, pictures. I cosplay, me working on film sets, and on my Twitter, you'll just find a bunch of random shit posts. But I mean, drop a line if you ever have any questions, if you ever want to talk. I mean, I'm here. I'm open for it, and I'm always willing to speak from my experiences. Because if I know that my experiences can help someone else, then it's always worth it. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
If you would like to send questions to us, if you are looking to have another guest be like Austin, if you really liked this episode, you can get at us at thebedroomplaylist@gmail.com, as on Instagram and Facebook. And
at Bedroom Playlist on Twitter.
I think for this week, folks. Okay. Oh, leave us an iTunes review if you have not.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Have a moment.
Yeah, that helps out a lot.
Yeah.
So with that,
stay freaky, folks.
Aces.
Hell yeah. On to our next fall.